I want to finish up the sermon that we started last, or the series that I started last Sunday on communication. And as I said last time, this will be the more the meat of the study, the practical stuff that I hope that you'll get a lot out of. It might be something that you want to review in the future, because a lot of these things are contrary to our nature, and therefore to hear them only once, if they're not continually practiced and reviewed, they're pretty easy to let them slip. So this morning I want to talk about four main things, and then under those four things there'll be several things under each one of them. And that is the types of, we're going to talk about types of conversation. We're going to look at tips for effective and enjoyable communication, the art of conversation, and then I want to talk a little bit at the end about introverts and extroverts and what that means, and how it can be helpful to understand the difference in people's makeup so that you can understand them a little better when it comes to conversation. So there are two main types of conversation, two main categories, and I would call them small talk and serious conversation. Now, of course, within both of those, there could be subcategories, but those are the two main types of communication or of conversation. And we'll start off talking with small talk, because that's where most conversation starts, or it should anyway, is with small talk. Now, for people who are introverts or intellectuals, small talk can be rather boring, can be sometimes unenjoyable. Sometimes people like that just are kind of chomping at the bit, wanting to just get to the good stuff. Let's quit talking about trivialities and let's talk about something interesting. But small talk is important. It does actually serve a purpose, though in and of itself, it's really not very valuable. It's pretty much meaningless and worthless, but it is a stepping stone to something else, and therefore it does have value. If you think about it, it would be awkward to meet somebody for the first time, and the first thing out of his mouth is wanting to discuss the meaning of life or the proper role of government in society or something, right? You'd probably think somebody like that is a bit off. Even if those topics are interesting to you, you'd think this guy's a bit strange, right? You can imagine if I went to a dinner party or a luncheon or a meeting or something, and I walk up to somebody and say, "Hi, my name's Chad. Just curious, what do you think the best form of government is? Would it be a constitutional monarchy or a constitutional republic?" Now, that's a fascinating question. It would make for a great conversation with certain people. And maybe even the guy that I just introduced myself to with that question, he might otherwise think that's a fascinating question. But chances are, he's going to think, this guy's a weirdo. Because nobody opens up a conversation like that with somebody they don't know, or even with somebody that they do know, right off the bat, right? So that would be a bit strange. So if you think about it, a way to think about small talk is that it's like warming up before you do a rigorous exercise. Everybody knows, I think everybody knows, that before you do a strenuous workout, you want to stretch, right? You want to stretch and limber up your muscles, because otherwise you can hurt yourself if you don't stretch out first. And you can think about small talk like that. It's stretching out, limbering up before you get into serious, you know, more meaningful, fruitful conversation. Now remember though, the small talk is not the exercise. The small talk is just the warm-up which keeps you from getting hurt. Because if you walk up and ask somebody about the proper role of government in society, right off the bat, you're going to get hurt emotionally because he's going to think you're a weirdo and not want to talk to you, right? So you just think about small talk in that way. Now the Bible does give an example, at least one that I could find, of engaging in small talk, and there's probably more. And I'm not going to read this for in the interest of time, because I do have a lot of outline to cover here. I even thought about splitting it up into two, but I just don't think there's enough to do that. So I'll just make reference to this passage, though, in Genesis chapter 29, verses 5 and 6. Jacob went into a place called Haran, and he meets these men, and he asks them where they're from. And they say, "We're from Haran." He said, "Oh, you're from Haran. Do you know Laban?" They say, "Oh, yeah, we know Laban. Is he well?" They say, "Yeah, he's well." You know, that's basically my paraphrase. This is typical small talk, and we do this all the time, right? You run into somebody, "Where are you from?" "Oh, I'm from Liberty." "Oh, you're from Liberty. Do you know so-and-so?" "Oh, yeah, I know that guy." "Oh, yeah, well, how's he doing?" Right? I mean, that kind of thing, right? So chances are if you run into somebody from Liberty, he doesn't know who you're talking about. There's like a million people there. But you can imagine if you said you're from Mosby, right? I mean, he pretty much knows everybody in Mosby, right? So anyway, the point is, this is typical. This is normal human behavior. right? Nothing wrong with it. But the Bible doesn't put a premium on this kind of talk, right? To spend 30 seconds doing that is great. To spend 30 minutes doing that is a waste of time, in my opinion anyway. Your time would be spent doing something else besides going on about trivialities. Now, there are two extremes to avoid when it comes to small talk. And this is usually the case with a lot of things. There are extremes on both sides that need to be avoided. The thing in and of itself can be fine, but if it's taken to either extreme, it's too much. And the two extremes would be, number one, never engaging in small talk. Now, most people don't have to worry about this. Most people are not guilty of this. Most people are guilty of the other thing, which we'll look at. But there are some socially challenged people who don't understand social norms, and they skip the, hi, how are you, how have you been, and jump right into whatever they've been obsessing about all day that they want to talk about. And you don't meet these people too often, but I have met them. I can think of two people in particular that I know that are pretty much like this, and that's really not much of an exaggeration, actually. Now, this can be off-putting to most people. It's just weird, like I mentioned before. When somebody walks up and they skip the whole, hey, how you doing, how you been, how's your week been, whatever, and just jump right into whatever, they've probably been thinking about this, it's been ruminating in their head all day long or all week long, and then they just want to jump right into it. You probably, maybe, are thinking of a certain person that used to be a member of this church, which was pretty much like that. This is something that he would have needed to work on. And yelling during sermons. Both of those things were things that needed to be addressed a bit. But anyway, such a person needs to learn to warm up a little bit with some light conversation for a few minutes before diving into something thought-provoking and interesting. In a lot of cases, people like that, you'll have very interesting conversations with the person if you're into, you know, intellectual things, but it's still a little off-putting. It's just strange, right? There's just that social awkwardness there a bit. Now, the other extreme to avoid when it comes to small talk is the complete opposite end, and that is always engaging in small talk. And my experience on this earth has been that a lot of people fall into this one. A lot of people never get past just trivialities. Some people never go deeper in a conversation than discussing the weather, what they ate for lunch today, how the game went last night, what happened at work today, what they saw on social media this morning, right? And it's just on and on and on. And that's it. I mean, that is the sum total of their existence. You will never go any deeper than that. They're an inch deep and a mile wide, right? You'll just never go deeper than that. Now, some people have the ability to go deeper than that. They just don't, right? Probably all of us have, if we really tried, would have the ability to do it if we wanted to. And that's kind of the purpose of addressing this, is to make you stretch beyond your boundaries, maybe, if you have trouble with some of these things. Such a person needs to spend more time thinking about serious matters of life and reading quality books, starting with the Bible. This is what I think, anyway. I mean, you know, a lot of this sermon is practical stuff, and I don't have verses for every single thing. And so, you know, I think you have enough discernment to realize that some of these things are my take on things. This is what I've learned over my life. And, you know, if you don't agree with everything said in this, that's okay, right? But this is what I think, anyway. I think that if you have a problem with ever getting into serious conversation, you need to start reading books, good quality books. Probably nonfiction, but even fiction. If you read good quality classic fiction books, you'll have a lot to talk about, right? Because, number one, a lot of those books were written a long time ago, so you learn historical things just by reading them. And then they're just good literature, right? And your mind will be expanded. You can talk about some of the great authors, right? There's just things you could talk about. And especially when you read nonfiction, of course, you could talk about things you learn. But the most important thing, of course, to read is the Bible. When you do this, this will focus your mind on important and substantial things, which will then prompt you to talk about such things. And the scripture teaches us this. Whatever we think about, we talk about. Luke 6 and verse 45, Jesus said, Luke 6:45, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good. And an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For out of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. See, whatever's in a man's heart, and whatever's in his heart is what he thinks about a lot. Whatever's inside him, in his soul, in the deepest recesses of his being, that is what he's going to talk about the most. Naturally. Aren't you going to talk about the thing you think about the most? If you think about something all the time, you're probably going to talk about it. Or you're going to be one frustrated person, one or the other. Because you probably want to talk about what you think about most, but if nobody else wants to talk about it, then you might be frustrated. And that can happen too. I'm not going to turn to this one, but Psalm 77:12 says, I will meditate also of all thy work and talk of thy doings. You see the connection there between meditating in God's words and talking about his word, talking about his doings. The other advantage to this is it'll give a person a depth of knowledge and understanding which will enable him to have an intellectual or an intelligent and fruitful conversation about things that matter. So the more you spend time in quality books, the deeper your knowledge gets, the broader your understanding of various things get, and then you can more easily have intelligent and fruitful conversations. Psalm 119 and verse 27. I'm just going to give you one of these verses and quote at the rest of them in the interest of time. If I had just had a little bit more material where I could have made this into two normal, semi-normal length sermons, I would have, but I have a feeling they would be both very short if I would have done that or tried. Psalm 119 and verse 27, so that's why I'm just going to be quoting at some of these verses. Make me to understand the way of thy precepts, so shall I talk of thy wondrous works. See, when you read the Bible, when you understand God's precepts, then you can talk about them. You can't talk about something you don't understand. Or let me rephrase that. You shouldn't talk about something you don't understand. You know, lots of people do. We all do. I'm sure we've all done that. But if you want to talk and not sound like a moron, right, then you probably should understand what you're talking about first. And that's why we need to read the Bible. Remember 1 Peter 3:15, but sanctify the Lord God in your heart and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope in you with meekness and fear. So when you are ready to give the answer and you've done so by reading and studying, then you can answer every man. When somebody asks you, you can give a reason for what you believe. Proverbs 15:28 says, the heart of the righteous studieth to answer. Right? So you can have good answers in conversations, good arguments, or just good things to share if you've read and studied, especially the scripture, but other good works as well. Proverbs 22:20-21, Solomon says something to the effect of, have not I written to thee excellent things and counsels and knowledge that thou mayest know the things, that thou mayest answer the words of truth to them that send unto thee. It was something to that effect. Proverbs 22:20-21. Have not I written to thee excellent things and counsels and knowledge that I might make thee know the certainty of the words of truth, that thou mightest answer the words of truth to them that send unto thee. So to be able to answer questions that people ask, we first need to read, to educate ourselves. Now, the degree to which a man will be able to engage in a meaningful, interesting, and fruitful conversation will in many cases be proportional to the number of quality books he has read. Now, the Bible would be equal to like 100 other ones, right? So if you've read the Bible and you're familiar with it, or maybe 1,000, right? So if you're really, really familiar with the Bible and you only read the Bible, and that there's nothing wrong with that, it'll be as if you've read 1,000 books. If you barely know the Bible and you've never read any other books, then you're probably not going to have a whole lot to talk about. Now, this is what I think anyway. I think the degree to which you can have meaningful, interesting, and fruitful conversations is going to be determined by how many books you read, how many good books you read. Now, you could also possibly throw in other kinds of media, like podcasts or lectures or documentaries or something, right? Or even just conversations that you've had with people that know a lot and you just sit there and learn from them, right? However you have assimilated a lot of information, but books is probably the best way to do that. But the point is, if your ability to communicate and to communicate well will have to do with how much information you have learned over the course of your life. And I think books is a good measure of that. But a Christian, at a minimum, should read and study his Bible so that he's able to participate in conversation about spiritual matters and not be ashamed by his ignorance. Remember 2 Timothy 2:15, famous verse. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Right? So if we don't study and read, like I've told you many times, we will be ashamed because somebody's going to ask a question and we're going to sit there with a dumb look on our face. Right? And you're not going to know the answer. And you think, well, I've been reading, I should have been reading the Bible for years. Why don't I know the answer to this question? Right? So we need to, at a minimum, study the Bible so that we can have at least those kind of conversations well. Now, the other type of conversation is serious conversation. So you have small talk, which is, you know, the limbering up, stretching out, getting ready. But what you're getting ready for is serious conversation. And the Bible extols serious conversation. It refers to it, at least in part, by sound speech. And pastors are said to be, that they are supposed to be a pattern for the brethren to follow in all things, including sound speech. The Titus 2, 7 through 8. Titus 2, 7 through 8. In all things, showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine, showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. So a pastor is supposed to use sound speech, and sound, the adjective, means in full accordance with fact, reason, or good sense, founded on true or well-established grounds, free from error, fallacy, or logical defect, good, strong, valid. So, talking about things that matter in a truthful, good, and valid way, in other words, is using sound speech. And so that would definitely factor into serious conversation. If you're using sound speech, then you are engaged in a serious conversation. I guess you could be engaged in a serious conversation and not have sound speech, and that wouldn't be very good. But if you have sound speech, then chances are you're engaged in serious conversation. Now, also, Christians are exhorted to be grave. And this is true of deacons. This is true of pastors because of a word called likewise that we'll look at. This is true of deacons' wives. And this is also true of aged men. So, basically, it's true of everybody, pretty much, right? Christians should be grave. Let me just give you the verses here. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 8. Now, I know I can tend to be on the serious side a lot of times, but I'm sort of supposed to be, right? I mean, pastors are supposed to be serious. I mean, it doesn't mean you're all work and no play, but then again, would you want a pastor that was just a joking goof-off and an unserious person? I certainly wouldn't. I mean, if I had to err on one side or the other, I'd rather have a pastor that's a little too serious than maybe one that's just a complete goof-off. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 8, likewise, so he just got done talking about the bishops, the elders, the pastors. He says likewise, which means the deacons need to, the pastors need to do this too, and the deacons need to do what the pastors do in this case. Likewise, must the deacons be grave, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, and so on. Grave. So pastors and deacons both should be grave. Grave is, when you're speaking of persons, which is the primary definition, it's having weight or importance, influential, respected. Of authors, books, maxims, advice, it's weighty or authoritative. Of persons, and this is what it's referring to here, of persons, their character, aspect, speech, or behavior, marked by weighty dignity of reverend seriousness, in latter use with wider sense of temperament, feeling, or their manifestations. It means serious, not mirthful or jocular, opposed to gay. So, pastors, deacons in this case, and we'll see aged men likewise, and the wives of the office holders there, are supposed to be marked by reverend seriousness. Somebody called me reverend the other day, and it just made me cringe. I don't remember who the guy, I don't even remember where it was. It was somewhere. And it was like a passing thing. I wasn't like in a full-fledged conversation. He said, thank you, reverend, or something. I'm just like, I hate that word because the Bible says holy and reverend is God's name. not man's name. And just the idea of like somebody thinking that I am to be revered is just it's just a very troubling thing to hear anyway. So I didn't say anything, but I shuddered within. And if it ever happened again, I definitely would say something. But anyway, but I'm supposed to be reverend serious, but I'm not reverend. Like I said, it also applies to the wives. Titus 3 and verse 11. Even so must their wives be grave. Right? So the deacons' wives are to be grave as well, and so are the aged men. Titus 2 and verse 2. Titus 2 and verse 2. That the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith and charity and patience. So the aged men are to be grave. I'd say the older you get, the graver you should become. The closer to the grave you get, the graver you should become, right? I mean, typically when you're older, you're more serious. The younger you are, the less serious and you know, goofy you act. And that should change as you age, I would think. So this implies that our conversations should be more serious than trifling. Now, you might think that I can't engage in good conversation because I'm not an impressive orator. I don't have good oratorical skills. I'm not eloquent in speech, in other words. But that's not necessary to be a good conversationalist. It can help. Of course, everybody likes talking with somebody who's very good with words, but you can nevertheless be a good conversationalist without being so good with words. The Apostle Paul was rude in speech, but not in knowledge. And that's really what is the foundation of a good conversation, is knowledge. Do you know anything about what is being talked about? It's pretty hard to have a conversation if you don't know anything about the subject being talked about, right? So if you know things about it, whether you're the best communicator or not, doesn't necessarily mean that you can't have a good conversation. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 6. But though I be rude in speech, yet not in knowledge, but we have been throughly made manifest among you in all things. So Paul was rude in speech, meaning that he was elementary in speech, that he wasn't highly educated in speech, but nevertheless he had good knowledge. He even said that his speech was contemptible, but not his ideas. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 10. For his letters, say they, these are his enemies saying this, his letters, say they, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak, and his speech contemptible. See, he wasn't a good speaker, but he had great ideas, right? His letters, when he could sit down and he could write out his ideas and think about them write and rewrite and get them just the way that he wanted to say them, weighty and powerful, he had great ideas, but he couldn't speak them very well. And I take a lot of comfort in that verse because I feel like I'm in a similar circumstance. I can write out my thoughts better than I can speak my thoughts. A good conversation is like ironing sharpening iron. Let's turn back to Proverbs 27 and verse 17. Proverbs 27 and verse 17. Iron sharpeneth iron. So a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. And of course, this is done through mainly conversation, right? How do you sharpen the countenance of your friend? The bearing, demeanor, comportment, behavior, conduct, sometimes between two persons toward each other. That's what countenance means. How do you sharpen the countenance of your friend, but through conversation? I don't know how else would you, right? So conversation, good quality conversation, is like iron sharpening iron. Two people having a conversation can make each other better, right? That's, of course, if it's a heart-to-heart, good quality conversation. So many conversations out there are like two wet noodles sliding around on each other, right? They're not iron sharpening iron. They're just, you know, not a whole lot is going on there. But when you have a good quality conversation like that, you walk away feeling sharper. You walk away feeling better. You walk away as an improved person. A good heart-to-heart conversation with another person is like looking into a mirror and seeing your own thoughts, feelings, experiences, struggles, and temptations in the other person. Proverbs 27 and verse 19. Proverbs 27:19, just a couple of verses later. As in water, face answereth to face. You know, when you look at still water, like in a pond or something, it's like a mirror, right? You look in the water, you see a reflection of yourself. As in water, face answereth to face, so the heart of man to man. When you have a heart-to-heart conversation with another person, and you're connecting at that level, it's as if you're looking into a mirror and you're seeing yourself, right? You can see, when you hear him talk about his thoughts, feelings, experiences, struggles, and temptations, you can relate to that. But that's only if you're having a heart-to-heart, serious conversation. When you're talking about the weather, or you're talking about what you had for lunch yesterday, I mean, yes, I guess I like sunshine too, and I think hamburgers are great. I really don't, but I think whatever. I think, you know, shrimp dinner is awesome. But am I really seeing a reflection of myself in your heart because we both like shrimp, right? I mean, you get what I'm saying? Like, it has got to be a heart-to-heart, like a serious conversation to really be able to see yourself in that other person. And a person has to be able to open up. If the other person you're talking to won't open up, you are not going to see yourself in that person. If you share some struggle or difficulty that you've been going through and that person is either too private or too proud to admit that he has had such things in the past or in the present, you're never going to have that heart-to-heart. You're never going to have that face-answering-to-face thing. Right? The person has to be willing to open up. And not all people are going to do that. And of course, nobody should do that with everybody, right? You're only going to do that with certain people you can trust, of course. But there will only be a limited amount of people in one's life and social circles with whom he can engage in serious conversation. You're never going to be able to do this with everybody, nor would you want to, nor could you. You don't have enough time in a day. But there's only going to be a limited number of people. And there may even be people that you would like to have that kind of conversation with that you're just not going to be able to. It is not going to work between the two of you because either one or both of you, somebody's not compatible there. It just won't work. Some people have neither the inclination nor the ability to discuss meaningful matters of life. Some people flat out just can't. They just have no capacity for that kind of thing. And some people just are too lazy and just don't feel like it. They probably could. They just don't have the inclination. They just don't care enough. Like, it's just too much work. It's a lot to have a serious, meaningful conversation with somebody, especially a heart-to-heart, especially anything that has emotion tied to it. Some people are just like, I just don't feel like it. It's just too much work, right? So you're not going to be able to do that with a lot of people. Now, you might wonder, well, how can I find somebody to have such a conversation with? Now, maybe you already have somebody, or maybe you don't. Sadly, a lot of people today, I think in this time that we live in, there are probably a lot of people out there that don't even have a close friend, that don't have a close friend that they could have this really serious, meaningful conversation with. And I hope that that's not none of us in here. But there are plenty of people out there today in the social media, Facebook world that don't have a real friend that they can actually have a conversation like that with. But how would you find somebody if you don't have somebody like that? I would say, I've thought of anyway, two ways that you can find people that you can participate in a weighty conversation with. And that is by asking personal questions and bringing up intellectual topics. Those are the two things that you can do. Now, if you're not into the personal stuff, you're not into the emotional stuff, bring up the intellectual topic. If you're not into the intellectual stuff, bring up the personal questions. If you're not into either one, then go talk about the weather. I don't know what to tell you, right? Or maybe there's some other way to do it. But these are the two that I thought about. If the person that you're trying to talk with here, if the person will not open up about personal matters, and there are people that just won't, like you'll see it in their face, I don't want to talk about that. I'm uncomfortable, don't ask me about that. They might not say that, but the look on their face will tell you that. If they will not open up about personal matters, or if the person shows no interest in or has nothing to say about intellectual topics, then serious conversation with him is very unlikely. Right? If you bring up an intellectual topic and then it's just like, oh, I don't know, like, or just look on your face like, I don't care, stop talking to me about this, or they just have nothing to say, then, you know, more than likely, this is not the kind of person you're going to have that conversation with. So in such cases, just talk about the weather for a few minutes. I'm just using the weather as an example. That's just one example of small talk. Talk about the weather for a few minutes and then seek out somebody else with whom you can converse seriously. A good way to generate a meaningful conversation, and this is a great one. I'd star next to this one if I were you. And this is something that I need to remind myself about and practice myself. But a good way to generate a meaningful conversation is to ask the other person what he is reading these days. That is a great question because it'll do two things. I just put up one finger. It'll do two things. Two things. First of all, his answer will indicate how deep of a thinker he is. If you say, "So what are you reading lately?" and he says, "Nothing." "Oh, you know, I heard it's going to be in the 60s this week and sunny. That is awesome. Have a great one, man." Right. I mean, you know, or "What are you reading these days?" "Oh, I've been pulling out my old Dr. Seuss books, you know, and taking a gander at them." Like, "Oh, that's awesome. Good." But, you know, if he says, "You know, I don't read a lot, but I've been reading my Bible." Well, there's something to talk about, huh? Right? That's a good one. It could also bring up interesting topics for conversation. If you say, "So what have you been reading lately?" "I've been reading about the rise and fall of the Roman Empire." "Fascinating, right? Tell me about it. Do you see parallels between that and what we're going through in the United States?" Right? I mean the questions would be innumerable, and the topics that you could talk about would be absolutely fascinating just by simply asking one question: "What are you reading these days?" Right? So That's one that I definitely need to remember. G.K. Chesterton, which you may have heard of him, he's a rather famous man. G.K. Chesterton said, "Men always talk about the most important things to perfect strangers." And there's a lot of truth in that. Have you ever had a perfect stranger pour out his whole life story to you? Somebody you just met? I have. Right? We've all probably experienced that. A lot of times it's very annoying. Sometimes it's okay, but a lot of times it's quite annoying. And a lot of times people that do that, the poor person just needs somebody to listen. And you just happen to be one person that would listen to him or her. And so just listen. If somebody does that, just listen. Because that person needs to talk to somebody. My mom and my brother say that this happens to them all the time. Apparently it's just their personality or something that multiple people have just started spewing their entire life history to them. That's kind of interesting. And it's amazing what people will tell you if you're just simply a good listener. I mean, you can learn crazy facts about people and all kinds of stuff that you have no business knowing about, nor should you, if you just listen. If you just will be a listening ear, people will tell you all kinds of stuff. What a person talks about most manifests his intellect. Remember, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. So whatever he talks about most is going to tell you something about, you know, what he's got going on upstairs. Eleanor Roosevelt, or Roosevelt, I'm not sure how, it looks like it's pronounced Roosevelt, but I've always heard it pronounced Roosevelt. But anyway, however it's pronounced, she allegedly said this quote, but it's falsely attributed to her. She didn't actually say it. But whoever said it, it's true. "Great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people." There's a lot of truth in that. And I ask you a question. Think about it in all seriousness. What do you discuss most often? Do you discuss people? You talk about other people, what other people are doing, what's happening in other people's lives. Do you discuss events? Or do you discuss ideas primarily? And whatever you discuss most will kind of tell you how big your mind is or how small your mind is. Let me give you an example. Do you talk about Kamala Harris and how stupid she is? That's talking about people. Do you talk about her debate with Donald Trump? That's talking about events. Or do you talk about whether women should have any part in government, period? That's talking about ideas, right? See the difference? I don't care about how dumb Kamala Harris is. I don't care about her debate with Trump. But I am very interested in having a conversation with somebody who won't punch me in the face about whether women should be involved in government or not. I think that's a great discussion to have. Another man named Henry Thomas Buckle said the following. He basically said what Eleanor Roosevelt allegedly said, only he said it in about four times as many words. Men and women range themselves into three classes or orders of intelligence. You can tell the lowest class by their habit of always talking about persons. The next by the fact that their habit is always to converse about things. The highest by their preference for the discussion of ideas. What he said is true, but he is the worst writer I have ever read in my entire life. That was an absolutely terrible sentence. You could literally take out 75% of the words and say the same thing 200% better. It's unbelievable. He needs to read The Elements of Style, little wee book, which will tell you how to cut out unnecessary words in your writing. But anyway, what he said was true, but wow. Talk about being loquacious. All right, now let's look at the next major category here, and that is tips for effective and enjoyable communication. And the first tip that I have here for you, I learned from my friend in the Army almost 20 years ago now, and he learned it from his grandfather. And as it turned out, his grandfather didn't come up with it, because I just read it in a Dale Carnegie book here that I'm going to be quoting in a minute. And I'm sure lots of people have probably said it over the years. But the saying is, to be interesting, you must be interested. If you want people to find you interesting, you must be interested in them. If you are not interested in other people, they will not find you interesting. They will not really want to talk to you. They might talk to you just because, but they're not going to be knocking down your door to talk to you if you are not interested in them. If you want to make and maintain friendships, the scripture teaches that we must be friendly. Remember Proverbs 18:24, he that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. He that hath friends doesn't necessarily have to show himself talkative. He has to show himself friendly. Talkative and friendly are not necessarily the same thing. Talkative can be just downright irritating. Friendly is when you actually care about the other person. And though when you're having a conversation, it is, you know, you're concerned about that other person's welfare. The Bible teaches that charity seeks not her own. First Corinthians 13:5. Charity seeketh not her own. 1 Corinthians 10:24. Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. Philippians 2:4. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Right? Charity, true Christian love, is more concerned about the other person. And that goes for conversation as well. Proverbs 19:22 tells us that the desire of a man is his kindness. Proverbs 19:22. The desire of a man is his kindness. And a poor man is better than a liar. This verse kind of used to make me scratch my head. I'm not sure why. I don't think it's all that difficult. But the desire of a man is his kindness. What makes a man desirable, in other words, is his kindness. You find a kind man, and men desire him because of his kindness. See, I just saw somebody nod their head like the light bulb went off. Well, that's good. So maybe I wasn't the only one that it was a little bit perplexing to. So if you're kind, people will desire you. If you show genuine interest in them, they'll desire you. There was an old Roman named Publius Syrus. He said, we are interested in others when they are interested in us. And that's true. That's true. You're probably not going to be too interested in a person that has no interest in you. Right? Somebody that never asks you a question, never concerned about you, only talks about himself, you're not going to be very interested in him. Dale Carnegie, in his famous book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, said the following. And I know I mentioned last Sunday that I didn't have any quotes from How to Win Friends and Influence People in this outline, but I went back through it this week because I'm rereading that book. I read it years ago, and I had forgotten that I had made a bunch of underlines in the book, so I just went back through all my underlines, and I incorporated several of the things in there that I found useful into this outline now. But Carnegie had this to say. One can make more friends in 2 months by becoming genuinely interested in other people than one can in 2 years by trying to get other people interested in him. And that's also, by the way, the trick, not the trick, but that's an effective method of being a good salesman, is to be interested in the other person, find out what he needs, and just show interest in him personally. He gives all kinds of examples of people that did this, that got huge contracts. And this is back in the 30s. But by just simply being friendly with some wealthy businessman who he tries to go in and sell something to, and he wouldn't have got in the door if he would have just gone in there and told him how great his product was. But he goes in there and he is friendly with him, shows interest in something the man is interested in. A five-minute meeting turns into an hour-long meeting, and he just sold $90,000 worth of product, which in 1930-something would have been millions, right? So there's a lot. There's a lot can be gained from learning how to communicate with people. If you don't care what others have to say, they will not be interested in you. Now, Theodore Roosevelt allegedly said, and I'll tell you why I say allegedly, he probably did say it, but it's just kind of ironic, I guess, that he said it, based on what I've heard about him, anyway. He said, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Bud Schaeberger was the first person that told me this. He said that Zig Ziglar said it, and Zig apparently heard it from Theodore, because Zig lived after Teddy did. But anyway, Bud was the first person that told me this. I have this written down and taped on my monitor, have for years. People don't know, or people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You can know everything there is to know about this person's problem, but if you don't care about this person's problem, the person doesn't care how much you know. I say he allegedly said it because he was kind of a guy that loved to be the center of attention all the time. From what I've read, I listened to a podcast about him one time, and his son said something close to the following. He said, "Father wanted to be the bride at every wedding and the corpse at every funeral." I've met people like that before. He was quite the guy, I guess, and Carnegie talks quite a bit about him in his book as well. It did sound like he was a very interesting man in many ways. Carnegie also said, "The royal road to a man's heart is to talk to him about the things he treasures most." You want to win somebody's heart, talk to him about what he treasures most. Now, few people do this. Most people talk about what they treasure most. Most of us, I mean, this is human nature, most of us talk about what we want to talk about. We do not talk about what anybody else wants to talk about. And that is one thing. If you can learn that one thing, be interested in the other person, talk about what the other person wants to talk about, people will be beating down your door to be your friend. They'll be beating down your door to do business with you. They'll love you. Now, another part of that goes into this about if you want to be interesting to be interested is to be humble. We're told in 1 Peter 5:5 that God resisteth the proud and giveth grace unto the humble. Right? Well, God's not the only one that resists the proud. You know other people do too. You probably do. Do you like proud people? Who likes anybody like proud people? Nobody likes proud people, right? We all resist proud people. Well, if you want people to like you instead of be repelled by you, be humble. Here's Carnegie again. "We ought to be modest." This is so good. "We ought to be modest, for neither you nor I amount to much. Both of us will pass on and be completely forgotten a century from now." He's actually wrong about that. Dale Carnegie, he hasn't been dead for a century, but he's been almost dead for a century from when he wrote that book, and he has not been forgotten. But he is the exception. Every one of you and I are going to be forgotten in a century from now. There won't be one single person on the face of this earth that ever knew you existed, that ever knew your name, that knows anything about you. Nobody will remember you. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. Once your grandkids are dead, nobody will ever know you existed, nor care that you existed. But you know who does know that you existed and care? God. That's the only reason why this life means anything, is because God knows, God cares, God remembers you, God knows you, and God loves you. But if you're counting on men remembering you and commemorating all the things that you did, forget about it. You will be forgotten in 100 years from now, guaranteed. Just like the vast majority of humankind. Anyway, let's continue. "Life is too short to bore other people with talk of our petty accomplishments. Let's encourage them to talk instead. Come to think about it, you haven't much to brag about anyhow." And that is so true. Do you realize that none of us have accomplished anything that anyone besides our mothers would be excited about? Seriously. Think of all your grand accomplishments, whatever they are. And do you realize that not a single person on the face of this earth probably really cares about it except your mother? It's true. It's true. Ask questions instead of always talking about yourself. That's what a humble person does. A humble person asks questions instead of always talking about himself. Carnegie again. He said, now this is actually Henry, he's quoting Henry Ford. Henry Ford said these words. If there is any one secret of success, it lies in the ability to get the other person's point of view and see things from his angle as well as your own. And that's very true. Written by a very, or spoken by a very successful man. He said that the secret of success is to get another person's point of view and see things from his angle as well as your own. That is very true. Now, almost nobody does this because all of us are more concerned about our point of view. Very few of us, and those of us who might be concerned about other people's point of view is probably because we've trained ourselves to be concerned about other people's point of view. Very few of us don't give a crap about other people's point of view. We only care about what we think and what we want. And everybody else is the same way. So if you want to get somebody to have a good conversation with you and to like you, be concerned about his point of view. And you might actually learn something. You'd be surprised out there that the universe consists of more than just you. And there are other ideas out there. And you can learn things when you actually are concerned about other people's point of view. If you start paying attention to most conversations, you will notice that they are a long series of declarative sentences with few, if any, questions ever asked. Just start paying attention. Start paying attention to your own conversations. And don't try to game the system here by going out and asking a million questions in your next conversation. But just pay attention. Just try to be cognizant of your next conversation and the person you're talking to, and see how many questions the person you're talking to asks you. You will be shockingly surprised to find out it's probably none or very close to that. My wife noticed this when she first got to America. This is apparently not as bad in the Philippines. And especially she noticed it among young people. I don't think I'm putting words in her mouth. In the Philippines, young people respect and revere old people. When young people have a conversation with old people, they're not telling them things. They're not declaring things to them. They're not telling them what they know. They're asking them questions, right? But that doesn't happen here. Even with young people, how many young people you ever talk to ask you a question? I mean, I'm not talking about little one, you know, little kids before they reach five or something, all they do is ask questions. But once they get past whatever that age is where they stop asking questions, how many young people, how many teenagers ever ask a question about anything? Especially anything like, what should I do in this situation? I mean, you ever heard a teenager say, what should I do in this situation? Good luck. They know everything. They don't need to ask anything. Approach a conversation with the attitude of learning something from or about the other person. In other words, esteem others better than yourself. Philippians 2 and verse 3. Philippians 2 and verse 3. Like I said, I don't have verses for everything that I'm saying, but I have some verses for the general principles for what I'm talking about anyway. Philippians 2 and verse 3, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness let each esteem other better than themselves. So if you approach a conversation with anybody, doesn't matter, younger than you, older than you, smarter than you, dumber than you, more educated, less educated, right? More life experience, less life experience, same gender, different gender, whatever. If you approach a conversation with the idea that in some way this person is better than I am and I can learn something from him, well, number one, you'll learn something. And number two, you'll make that person very happy. Carnegie again said, remember what Emerson said. I don't know if this is Ralph Waldo Emerson. I'm not sure. But anyway, Emerson, probably old Ralph. He said, every man I meet is in some way my superior, and in that I can learn of him. Now, I'm assuming Emerson, if he's talking about Ralph Waldo, was a very famous man, right? And if a very famous man has that attitude, why don't we? Why don't we view every person we meet in some way my superior that I can learn something from? Now, the next tip is to listen to learn to listen attentively. This is Carnegie again. Isaac F. Markesson. Isaac F. Markesson, who is probably the world's champion interviewer of celebrities. Now remember, this is in the 30s. You've never heard of Markesson, I don't think. Neither have I, right? Because he was, you know, an interviewer back then. And guess what? The world's champion interviewer, a famous guy. You've never heard of him, and neither has anybody else, right? He's in the dustbin of history. Nobody remembers him. You're not going to be any better. Anyway, he declared that many people fail to make a favorable impression because they don't listen attentively. Quote, now this is this man he's quoting. They have been so much concerned with what they are going to say next that they do not keep their ears open. And you realize that's what most conversation consists of. Keeping your mouth shut long enough till the other person pauses and you can say what you want to say or what you've been thinking about, right? That's most conversation. We're all guilty of it, every one of us. Big men have told me that they prefer good listeners to good talkers, but the ability to listen seems rarer than almost any other good trait. And he's not the only one that thinks that. I got some other quotes here for you in a minute. The Bible teaches us to be swift to hear, slow to speak, James 1 and verse 19. You see, the Bible teaches the same thing. The Bible teaches you how to do more listening than talking. James 1 and verse 19, Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Swift to hear, slow to speak. Now, if you invert that verse, that describes most every one of us. We are swift to speak, slow to hear. But we're supposed to be slow to speak, swift to hear. As the old saying goes, you've been given two ears and one mouth, use them proportionally. Listen to what the other person, listen when the other person talks instead of impatiently waiting for him to stop talking so that you can say what you want. And like I said, this is what most conversation boils down to. Listening, I'll put that in quotes, listening long enough until the other person stops talking or at least takes a breath for 32 milliseconds so that you can jump in and say what you want to say. That's most conversation. That's usually how it happens. But we ought to do what Alice Dewar Miller said. Listen to this. This is so good. People love to talk but hate to listen. Listening is not merely not talking, though even that is beyond most of our powers. Very true. It means taking a vigorous human interest in what is being told us. You can listen like a blank wall, or like a splendid auditorium where every sound comes back fuller and richer. That is so good. I thought that was fascinating. Listen like a blank wall. You can just sit there with a dumb look on your face and just endure the other person talking until he's done, and then you say what you want to say. Or you can listen like a splendid auditorium where everything echoes back and it actually sounds better, right? So in other words, if you think about this, actually do this physically, after someone finishes telling you something, repeat back to him what he said. You say something like, "What I hear you saying is this." Is that right? That'll do two things. First of all, it'll help you to understand and remember what the person said. Because a lot of times why we don't remember things is, number one, we don't try to. Number two, they don't get repeated back to us. So when somebody says something and you are really trying to listen, repeat back to him what he said in other words. So it'll help you to understand and to remember. And secondly, it will show the person that you are interested in what he has to say. Can you imagine if you were explaining something to somebody, and rather than as soon as you get done, him changing the subject, which is what most people do, or saying what you want to say about the subject, which is what most people do. Can you imagine if you got done explaining something and the person said, "Okay, so if I understand right, you're saying this," and he repeats back what you just said in different words, showing that he was actually listening and paying attention. You're gonna love that guy. You think that's the best conversationalist in the world. You know why he thinks he's the best? You know why you think he's the best conversationalist in the world? Because he actually cares what you said. That's why. Carnegie gives an example of that in his book. He met some guy and ended up talking to him for hours about arborism or something. He was a plant guy. And Carnegie was truly interested in what the guy was talking about. And he just spent hours at this party talking to the guy. And after he was done, the man walked away and said, "That man is the best conversationalist I ever met in my entire life." All Carnegie did was sit there and ask a few questions and listen to what he said. But that man walked away thinking he was the best conversationalist ever. Because people love it when you actually show interest in them. And you can get a leg up on 99% of the population because most people do not care about what anybody else thinks or says. They only care about what they want to talk about. If you actually listen and you actually care and you actually will show interest in somebody else, you have a leg up on 99% of the population. You don't want to overdo this thing of repeating back what he said to you, though, to the point of being annoying. My wife and I were listening to a podcast when we went, on our summer trip or something, and this podcast host was definitely overdoing it. I mean, every single thing that was said. So what I hear you saying is this, and it does get a little annoying. So you can take anything to the extreme for sure. Carl Menninger said, "Listening is a magnetic and strange thing, a creative force. The friends who listen to us are the ones we move toward, and we want to sit in their radius. When we are listened to, it creates us, makes us unfold, and expand." It's true. You really can make somebody into a better person just simply by listening to him or her, because so many people just want to be listened to. So many people just want somebody to care about them and what they're thinking about and what they're saying. When someone finishes telling you about something that he recently accomplished or something that he's interested in, rather than being like most people and responding by talking about one of your accomplishments or of something you're interested in, instead ask him questions about what he just mentioned. That will set you apart from most people. Because most people, if you tell somebody about something you accomplished or something you're interested in, the next words out of their mouth is going to be what they accomplished and what they're interested in. Most people won't even acknowledge what you said, hardly. They will just talk about themselves as soon as you get done telling them anything that you just did. And that's very annoying. H. Jackson Brown Jr., who wrote Life's Little Instruction Book, I found this at a used bookstore, and it's an outstanding little book. You can read it in maybe like a half an hour. It's got 511 tips. Little wise tips for life. And this man wrote it to his son when his son was going off to college. He just sat down. He was just going to write out a few things. Ended up being 511 of them. And at that point, just, you know, stapled them together, put them in a binder or something. And when he dropped his son off at college, he said, "This is basically my gift to you, and I hope it's helpful." And his son read it, and got back to him and said it was the best gift he'd ever been given in his life. Fascinating little book. Well, it turns out, I guess, Mr. Brown did two other volumes of it, so there's three volumes of it now. You can get all three in one volume on Amazon, which when I get enough in my cart to get free shipping, I intend to buy that. But the little one, though, I've read it a couple times or more. It's great. It's one of those things, I think, for me personally, I want to read it probably at least 1,000 times. Just read it and read it and read it and read it and read it until all those things sink in, because they're just little wise sayings about all kinds of stuff in life. I don't agree with every single one of them, but you'd have a wonderful life if you just did the majority of those things in your life. Anyway, he said, when someone is relating an important event that's happened to them, don't try to top them with a story of your own. Let them have the stage. But this is pretty much not what anybody does. Most people, when somebody tells you an important event, you're going to tell them about an important event in your life. "I went to the Rockies for vacation. It was absolutely beautiful." You know what the guy says? He doesn't say, "Oh, wow, tell me about it. Which mountain range were you in? What was the elevation? What did you see? What did you like about it?" You know what most people are going to say? "I went to the Alps, and they're bigger and more beautiful." They might not say it quite like that, but that's the gist of what they're going to say. "Oh, well, I went such and such a place." Don't even ask you a question. Samuel Johnson said, "That is the happiest conversation where there is no competition, no vanity, but a calm, quiet interchange of sentiments. And that's just a great quote. That describes a quality conversation to a T, in my opinion. Let me read it again. That is the happiest conversation where there is no competition, no vanity, but a calm, quiet interchange of sentiments. That's so true. It's so aggravating when you talk to people and you tell them something and then all they can do is turn around and tell you something that they did without even acknowledging what you said or asking any question about it. You tell somebody, hey, I got a raise. Oh, I got a bigger one. We just had twins. We just had triplets. I just bought a house. I have a bigger one. Right? I mean, I'm exaggerating. Nobody would probably actually say that, but that's the gist of most conversation if you really think about it. All right, the next tip for effective and enjoyable conversation. Don't talk too much. The Bible teaches us that a fool is full of words. Ecclesiastes 10, 11 through 14. The Bible has a lot to say about talking too much, and none of it is good. Ecclesiastes 10, 11 through 14. There's one exception to that rule, though. Sermon preaching. Ecclesiastes 10, 11 through 14. I'm kind of kidding. Even that can be overdone, which this sermon's probably working on that. Ecclesiastes 10, 11 through 14. Surely the serpent will bite without enchantment, and a babbler is no better. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is mischief, is madness. A fool is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be and what shall be after him. Who can tell him? A fool is full of words. You find a person that talks incessantly, and you've probably found a fool. Wise men, on the other hand, spare their words. Let's look at Proverbs 17, 27 through 28. Proverbs 17, 27. He that hath knowledge talks a lot and tells everybody everything he knows. Is that what it says? He that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. Even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise. And he that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding. A lot of wisdom in those words. Proverbs 29:11. Proverbs 29:11. A fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. And this is probably referring to when the fool's upset. And that's definitely a time when you want to keep your words to a minimum. Because when you're upset, that is not the time to be talking. Because pretty much almost nothing good will ever come out of your mouth when you're upset. Unless you're very careful and very calculated. And it's hard to do that when you're in an emotional state. Dorothy Neville said, "The real art of communication is not only to say the right thing in the right place, but to leave unsaid the wrong thing at the tempting moment." That's a very wise saying. That's a wise woman right there. Not only to say the right thing in the right place, and that's hard, right? Because a lot of times I walk away from a conversation thinking, oh, why didn't I say that? But also, and more importantly, to leave unsaid the wrong thing at the tempting moment. Because, oh, it's so tempting to say something. I want to say it so bad. And sometimes, many times, oftentimes, probably most times, we say it. When we're tempted to say something, even if we know we shouldn't say it, I'm going to say it anyway because I'm upset. She's very right. I think, was it Churchill? I don't remember, it was somebody, some famous guy anyway. I think it was Churchill said that there's always time to add a word, but never time to take one back. Think about that. Let me just give you a few wise observations here about talking too much. These are just some quotes that I've collected over the years. This is from Charles Bridges in his excellent book on Ecclesiastes. I'd highly recommend it. In fact, he says, in fact, it is generally found that those who have the most discourse have the least knowledge. Words are too often the substitute for thinking rather than the medium of thought. There's a lot of truth in that. As Fred Hodgins says, as his dad, I think, told him, they that know the least know it the loudest. Elder Leon Clevenger, did you guys know Leon Clevenger? Yeah. Elder Leon Clevenger said, empty wagons make more noise than full and weighty ones. That's true. It's very true. I mean, it's true physically because they rattle around, make a ton of noise. Take a wagon and load it down, it doesn't make much noise. Take a person and load him down with knowledge, and he doesn't make a lot of noise. You take a person with an empty head, and he's going to make a lot of noise. Bernard M. Baruch, you may have heard of him, he's a famous guy. He said, most of the successful people I've known are the ones who do more listening than talking. Plato, who was no dummy, said, wise men speak because they have something to say. Fools, because they have to say something. I love that. That's one of my favorite quotes. Poor old Peter reminds me of him. Remember when they, on the Mount of Transfiguration, Peter said, let's build three tabernacles here, one for Moses, one for Elias, and one for thee. And it said, because he wist not what to say. He had to say something. He didn't know what to say, so he just came up with something dumb to say. And then some unknown quantity said one of my favorite quotes. Better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak and to remove all doubt. And I've actually employed this one in my life before. When I was working as an engineer, I remember one time we were having some kind of a meeting. It was about some technical thing. And whatever they were talking about, I assumed I should know what they're talking about, but I didn't know what they were talking about. And I contemplated, should I ask what they're talking about and risk looking like an idiot, or should I just sit here and be quiet and not say anything? And I chose to be quiet and not say anything because if I would have asked what they were talking about, chances are they would have known I'm an idiot. But if I sat there and was quiet, they might have just suspected I might be an idiot, but not known for sure, right? So I just kept quiet about it. But then there are other times, there were another situation similar, and somebody was talking about something in a meeting that I didn't know anything about, and I just thought, well, I should probably know about this. And I finally just said, what is that? What are you talking about? And it was some proprietary thing that I would have had no idea about. I mean, I was not expected, you know, under any circumstances to know. So in some cases, it does make sense to just ask. You know, there are no dumb questions, just dumb people that ask them. So anyway, as the old saying goes, Seneca, he was the ancient Roman, he said, when I think over what I have said, I envy dumb people. Dumb in the primary sense of the word, of course. Talking for long periods of time without pausing to give the other person a chance to respond will weary and irritate him. Have you ever met people? Now, there are lots of people that just talk like this and never give you a chance to respond, never even pause. They don't understand the idea of a natural pause in a conversation. But some people take it even to another level. Have you ever met people? I have. Maybe it's just because sometimes people call me up and ask me questions. But where somebody will be rambling on and ask you a question and not even pause after they ask the question for you to give the answer. They'll ask the question and just keep talking after they ask the question. And maybe ask a series of questions and never stop talking to even give you a chance to answer the question they supposedly want the answer to. And I get people every now and again that call me up and I just basically sit there and just listen to them and then finally ask, do you have a question? Like you're calling a pastor, presumably maybe you have a question, or I mean, if you just want to talk forever, that's fine. But anyway, it's funny. And you know what? 99 times out of 100, somebody like that is just wasting your time. They're not going to join the church. If they call up a pastor and have no question and just want to go on and on and on and on about what they've been through and what they know and what they, you know, and never ask a question, forget it. They're never going to be converted. Ever learning, never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. So I just listen until the conversation finally ends in that case. And then probably never hear back from them again. Now, this is especially true. You know, when somebody talks for long periods without pausing and to give a person a chance to respond, it's irritating. What's especially true if the person you're conversing with is an introvert or a person with manners who doesn't like to interrupt. Right? For introverts who are not big talkers, or for people that have manners that don't like to interrupt, it's especially irritating when somebody just goes on and on and on and never stops, never pauses to give you a chance to respond. I'll talk about interrupting here in just a minute. The next tip on effective and enjoyable communication is don't talk about yourself too much. Because fools are only interested in themselves. The Bible teaches us this. Proverbs 18 and verse 2. Find a person who is only interested in himself and his ideas, and you'll find a fool. Proverbs 18 and verse 2. A fool hath no delight in understanding, but that his heart may discover itself. Doesn't want to learn, doesn't want to ask another person another question to learn, only wants to discover itself. He's only interested in himself. Every man's favorite subject is himself. And that is true. Fools and wise alike, every man's favorite subject is himself. If you remember that one fact and act accordingly, you'll have a lot of people that'll like you. If you remember that every man's favorite subject is himself, you want to ask somebody questions that's going to get him excited, get him happy, make him like you, ask him about himself. Because that's every person's favorite subject. Dale Carnegie again, in How to Win Friends and Influence People. He says, if you want to know how to make people shun you and laugh at you behind your back and even despise you, here is the recipe. Never listen to anyone for long. Talk incessantly about yourself. If you have an idea while the other fellow is talking, don't wait for him to finish. He isn't as smart as you. Why waste your time listening to his idle chatter? Bust right in and interrupt him in the middle of a sentence. That's a great way. You want to lose friends. You want to make people hate you. Right there is what you do. Interrupt them right in the middle of what they're trying to say. I quote again from him. He says, the man who talks only of himself thinks only of himself. Remember, you talk about what you think about most. You talk only about yourself. That means you think only about yourself, right? And, quote, the man who thinks only of himself, says Dr. Nicholas Murray Butler, president of Columbia University, is hopelessly uneducated. He is not educated, says Dr. Butler, no matter how instructed he may be. This is Carnegie again. So if you aspire to be a good conversationalist, be attentive listeners. As Mrs. Charles Northam Lee puts it, quote, to be interesting, be interested, unquote. Ask questions that the other man will enjoy answering. Encourage him to talk about himself and his accomplishments. Remember that the man you are talking to, remember this. This is absolutely true. Remember that the man you are talking to is 100 times more interested in himself and his wants and his problems than he is in you and your problems. His toothache means more to him than a famine in China that kills 1 million people. That's absolutely true. For almost every single person on the face of this earth, that is absolutely true. He would be more concerned about his own toothache than he would be 1 million people dying of starvation in China. You know it's true if you think about it. You ever had a toothache? You'd say, absolutely, I totally agree. A boil on his neck interests him more than 40 earthquakes in Africa. Think of that the next time you start a conversation. And then one more from Carnegie. He says, and he's quoting another man, Kenneth M. Good. Stop a minute, says Kenneth M. Good in his book, How to Turn People into Gold. Stop a minute to contrast your keen interest in your own affairs with your mild concern about anything else. Realize then that everybody else in the world feels exactly the same way. Then, along with Lincoln and Roosevelt, you will have grasped the only solid foundation for any job other than a warden in a penitentiary, namely that success in dealing with people depends on a sympathetic grasp of the other man's point of view. Now, I told you I would get back to not interrupting. This is an important one. This is the fifth tip. Fifth tip. I'm terrible at that. Can't even count. The fifth tip on effective and enjoyable communication is to not interrupt. Do you know why the man did not talk to his wife for an entire week? Because he didn't want to interrupt her. An old American Indian proverb says, listen or thy tongue will keep thee deaf. There's some truth in that. Interrupting someone is rude. At least that's what I think. I imagine that a lot of you agree with me. It implies that what he has to say is not important, or at least not as important as your thoughts are. Because really, when you interrupt somebody, that's the message you're conveying, whether you mean it or not. You are saying, what you're saying is not important. It's definitely not as important as what I have to say. That's why I'm interrupting you. I wouldn't interrupt you if you were saying something more important than what I have to say. So anytime you interrupt somebody, remember, what you're telling them is, your thoughts are not important to me. My thoughts are more important. Interrupting is especially offensive to introverted people. I happen to be one of those introverted people, so I know what I'm talking about, or at least in my own situation, I know what I'm talking about. Interrupting is especially offensive to introverted people. I personally do not like feeling pressured into speaking quickly. And when I talk with somebody who interrupts a lot, I feel pressured into speaking quickly. I've got to say what I say, and I can't pause for 10 milliseconds, or else he's going to jump in. I'm going to get interrupted. And so I've got to speak quickly. I got to get it all out as fast as I can before I get interrupted. And I don't like that. That makes me uncomfortable. I just rather not have the conversation. And when I talk to somebody like that, I pretty much just sit back and just let it go where it goes. I just let them talk. Just let them talk, let them talk, let them talk. Maybe say a thing or two if I get a chance to, but just I don't even try. Unless I really need to say what I need to say. I mean, if there is something that I must get across, then I do. And in that case, he interrupts, and I say, what I was saying was, and I go right back to what I was saying. And he interrupts, what I was saying was, and I go right back to what I'm saying. And I just keep saying, what I was saying was, and I just go right back to where I was, and I finally get what I'm trying to say across. And sometimes it finally gets through the thick skull, like, oh, maybe I should stop interrupting, right? But that's not enjoyable. I just do that if I have to, if there's something that I have to get across. Otherwise, just forget about it. Now, extroverted people are used to interrupting, and they often don't mind being interrupted. So for some people, interrupting is not rude. They don't consider when they interrupt somebody else to be rude, and they don't even consider it rude when somebody else interrupts them because they're just used to it. That's just communication for them. Interrupting is normal. And there are some people who talk incessantly and will never stop unless they are interrupted. I have met a couple of these in my life where they just talk nonstop and you must interrupt or you're attending a lecture. That's the two choices there. And people like this, you've got to rein them in. And they're also the types that are usually talk forever and never answer your question. You ask them a question, and they'll ramble on and on and on and on. I mean, they might go on for 5 or 10 minutes and never answer the question, actually. They don't have a principle. They don't have a sound mind, but they don't have a strong mind where they can't remember what the question was and actually answer it. They just start talking about whatever they think about and just all over the place, never answer the question. So you got to rein them in. You got to interrupt and you got to say, hey, let's get back to what we were talking about here, right? Because, you know, otherwise, it's never going to end. Now, what I have done, what I did learn to do with one person, and I loved this man, don't get me wrong, I really did, but he would talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and just never stop. And I don't like interrupting. So what I decided I would do is that I would just listen, and I would try to figure out how you can go from one topic to the next in a seamless flow ad infinitum. Because I can't do that. If I talk, except in sermons, if I talk more than about 30 seconds, I start to get self-conscious. I don't, unless I'm telling us some story. And even then, I'm very aware of people's mannerisms, of the look on their face. I can tell when somebody's bored. And the moment that I perceive that somebody's bored with what I'm saying, and I don't blame you. I'm not an interesting person. I don't blame you for being bored with what I'm saying. But the moment I recognize that somebody's bored with what I'm saying, I just usually just cut it off short. Ask them something, bring up something else. I do not like to burden somebody with my talking, except in a sermon. I don't mind that. But other than that, maybe that's why I preach long sermons, because I finally get a chance to say everything I want to say. But anyway, I would listen to this man, and I just think, how do you do it? I just couldn't do that. I don't even know how you could possibly just talk forever and then just one subject to the next. And just this seamless flow, it's just amazing. So when he would talk, I would just listen, and but I'd be listening for the transition. I wouldn't really be paying attention to what he was saying necessarily. Just listening for the transition, and I get a little smile on my face every, you know, 2 minutes or so, because I'm like, oh, that's how he did that. He went from this to that to that. Like that. So I look like I'm paying attention. I'm really not paying attention at all. I'm just listening for the transition just to see how can this feat be done where you can talk forever without stopping. This is fascinating. And that made conversation more enjoyable, actually, because it gave me something to do, I guess. But anyway, funny. I really did love the man dearly, though. I'm not saying anything bad about him. Here's the sixth and final tip on effective and enjoyable communication. Now, this one you need to pay attention to. Every one of us need to pay attention to. Because I guarantee you, every one of you is bad at this. And so am I. I work on it. But most people are bad at this. And when you meet somebody that's good at this, you will love them. You'll think they're your best friend. You will think more highly of them than you would just about anybody else. And that is, remember the other person's name when you hear it and use it in a conversation occasionally. And that'll help you to remember it. When you are introduced to somebody and they give you their name, remember it. You say, oh, I can't do that. I'm no good at that. Have you tried? Have you actually tried to remember somebody's name? Because if you don't try, nobody's any good at it. You know how many times somebody has introduced themselves and said, hi, my name's Bob. And literally 1 second later, I'm like, what was his name? I didn't try. I didn't make any effort whatsoever to listen to memorize his name. I'm telling you, you remember people's names, it'll make you $1 million, literally. You're a salesman, you're in business, you can remember people's names, it'll literally make you $1 million. Carnegie said, remember that a man's name is to him the sweetest and most important sound in any language. It's true. It is true. It makes one feel important when somebody doesn't, or it makes one feel unimportant when someone doesn't remember his name, especially after you've talked to him more than once. You ever met somebody and maybe the first time you introduce yourself and they don't remember your name? Eh, that's okay. You can let that go. And they say, I'm sorry, can you tell me your name again? But after you've talked for a while and then you meet the person again, maybe meet him again, and then the person still doesn't know your name, you're like, that person, he didn't care about me apparently at all. Like, that didn't make me feel good at all, right? But you know, when you meet somebody and you introduce yourself and you give them your name one time and that person remembers your name from then on out, highly impressive to me anyway. Remembering a man's name after first hearing it requires effort, though, but it pays huge dividends, huge social dividends if you can remember people's names. So let me give you some tips, three tips on how to remember somebody's name when you're introduced. Number one, as soon as you hear it, repeat it back to yourself in your mind several times. The person says, hi, I'm Bob. And you say, Bob, Bob, Bob. You're saying this in your mind. Bob, he's going on. He's maybe talking about what? Bob, 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 Bob. You know, you say it repeatedly back into your mind again, okay? Then you use it in a conversation. You say, oh, nice to meet you, Bob. How are you doing, Bob? How many kids you have, Bob? Are you married, Bob? Where do you work, Bob? Right? Of course, that's, you're going to get annoying, right? You don't do that that many times. But you do it throughout the conversation. You use his name and use it very quickly. Say, nice to meet you, Bob. Right? You use the name. Right? Bob's easy. If his name is some Hindu name or something, it's a little bit more difficult. Right? So you repeat it in your mind several times, use it in a conversation, and then associate it with something or someone else you know. Bob. Bobber. I love fishing. Bobber. Ah, I remember now. Bobber. It's easy, right? Hi, my name's Steve. Steve Jobs, inventor of iPhone. I remember that. Never forget it for the rest of my life, right? Associate with another person or another thing. That's the trick to remembering somebody's name. But if you say, I can't remember names, my question is, have you tried? Have you actually done those things right there? Because you can remember names. You know why I know that? You remember my name, right? You know everybody's name in this room. You can remember names, right? You just have to try. That's all. All right, now let me briefly tell you about the art of conversation. I'm just going to list off some things here that, in my opinion, are the elements that are necessary for a good conversation. Because conversation is an art. It's probably more of an art than a science, for sure. And in my view, these are the following elements that are necessary. Number one, some degree of common background or interests. I have found that the people with whom I have the best, most enjoyable conversations are those with whom I share the most values and principles. I was thinking about this. My closest friends are they who are on the same page with me on everything or nearly everything. Because that's when you have people that you're on the same page with about everything, there's no subject that's taboo. There's nothing that I can't bring up. There's nothing that I say, well, I can't say that. It's gonna step on his toes, right? So if there's nothing that you could bring up that's going to step on somebody's toes, you can talk about anything you want, and you're free. You don't feel like you have to self-censor. You don't feel this tension there or this, oh, I got to be careful what I say. So the people that you're going to have the best, most enjoyable conversations with are the people that you hold the most values and principles with, I believe. And the more values and principles that two people share, the more that they will be able to talk about freely. And the fewer values and principles that two people share, the fewer things they're going to be able to discuss freely. Because there's just, you know, there's just those things you can't talk about. And the more and more things you can't talk about, the less and less, you know, topics that there's going to be to talk about, or the fewer and fewer. Is it fewer? Fewer, not less? Fewer? There you go. See, there's another Pennsylvania hillbillyism I'm trying to break myself of. And the fewer things you can discuss, the less enjoyable and meaningful the conversation will be. Eventually, it'll just get, I mean, you meet somebody that you agree with absolutely nothing on. What can you talk about? I mean, nice day out there, isn't it? This sandwich really tastes good. I mean, what else are you going to talk about? All right, second thing, in my view, necessary element for good conversation, is a seamless back and forth exchange of ideas. We've probably all had these kind of conversations and walked away and felt very good afterwards. Just a seamless back and forth exchange, right? Not one person dominating and not one person doing all the talking, not you doing all the talking, right? Just a seamless back and forth. Thirdly, a good ratio of talking and listening and questions and declarations. Fourthly, a brief to moderate time of speaking followed by a natural pause, which gives the other an opportunity to respond. And this is, I think, crucial to being a good conversationalist, is mastering the natural pause. Because when you're talking with a person, if he understands the natural pause and you understand the natural pause, there is no need to interrupt. Because you know the natural pause is coming. You don't have to sit there and think, oh, is he going to go on for 10 minutes and never shut up and I need to interrupt? No, you know this man, when he's done saying what he needs to say, there's going to be a natural pause and then it's my turn. Right? Natural pause, it's his turn. Natural pause, it's my turn. Back and forth. Right? So you talk for a little bit of time, you know, depending on the conversation, that might be a few seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, a couple minutes, whatever. I mean, and then natural pause and the other person gets to respond. Fifthly, knowledge of the subject matter of the conversation. It's hard to have a conversation if you don't know anything about what's being talked about. That's why if you broaden your knowledge and you're well-read and you know a lot of things about a little bit of things about a lot, you can have a lot of good conversations. Which ties into it, the next one. A broad knowledge of many areas of life and study which enables a person to know at least enough to have something of value to add or to be able to ask informed questions. Even if you don't know enough to add any value to the conversation, if you know enough to ask informed questions, then you can still have a good conversation. What is this? Number seven, a genuine curiosity about people and ideas. A genuine curiosity. Now, if you talk too much, people won't want to ask you questions. That's the thing. You ever met somebody that talks a lot? And you just think, you know, I even have a question I would be curious to get the answer to. I just can't handle another 5 minutes. Right? I can't. If I ask the question, I know it's going to be another huge, long monologue, and I just can't do it. I'd rather be ignorant than ask the question. So if you want people to ask you questions, learn to answer questions and learn to answer them in, you know, maybe 30 seconds or less. Instead of going on and on and on and on, because you're going to wonder then why nobody asks you any questions. And then lastly, a willingness to open up and share one's inward thoughts and feelings. If you're not willing to do that, there's going to be a lot of quality conversation that you won't be able to have. You can still talk about intellectual things, but a lot of good heart-to-heart conversations, if you're not willing to open up and share your inward thoughts and feelings, you're cutting yourself off. And that's fine. It's up to you, right? Some people are just private and they don't want to talk about their thoughts and feelings. And if that's you, then you're going to limit yourself in quality conversations that you can have, I think, anyway. And then here's another biblical tip, and we're almost done. And that is to let your speech be always with grace and seasoned with salt. That's what it says in Colossians 4:6. And I'm going to read what Matthew Henry had to say about that verse because I thought it was really good. He said, "Let your speech be always with grace," Colossians 4:6. "Let all your discourse be as becomes Christians, suitable to your profession, savory, discreet, seasonable. Though it be not always of grace, it must be always with grace. And though the matter of our discourse be that which is common, yet there must be an air of piety upon it, and it must be in a Christian manner seasoned with salt. Grace is the salt which seasons our discourse, makes it savory, and keeps it from corrupting." I thought that was very well said, especially the part about our conversation doesn't always have to be, how did he put it, of grace. Like, it doesn't always have to be talking about the grace of God necessarily, but it has to be with grace. So everything you talk about can be with grace, though you may not be talking about grace per se. So I thought that was really good. John Gill had a lot to say, which I'm not going to read because he's one of these guys that goes on and on forever. And so anyway, you can read that quote if you want on your own time. But I want to finish up just by briefly talking about introverts and extroverts. Introversion and extroversion are not necessarily synonyms with quietness and loquaciousness. In other words, talking a lot. I think some people sort of think that, well, an introvert's a person that doesn't talk very much, an extrovert's a person that talks a lot. That's not necessarily the case. Those are characteristics of those two, but that's not necessarily the case. Introverts spend a lot of time in their own heads. They are energized by spending time alone. An introvert must expend much energy when conversing with others. During a conversation, energy is lost for the introvert. And after spending time in conversation, he must retreat to his quiet place to think, rest, read, and recharge. That's an introvert. Okay? He can talk a lot, but when he does, it wears him out. It exhausts him. Okay? He's much more comfortable. He can rest and be at ease and at peace and feel fulfilled when he's sitting by himself and thinking. That's an introvert. Now, extroverts don't require a lot of alone time. Of course, everybody requires some, but they don't require nearly as much as introverts. They are energized by talking with other people. Conversation is not laborious to extroverts. They gain energy in a conversation. And after conversing with a room full of people, they are revitalized. See, the introvert is exhausted. He's ready to go home. The extrovert, feeling great. Let me just give you an analogy that should help. I got this one from my wife. She got it from some guy that's really into the Myers-Briggs personality types. My wife's really interested in that stuff. If you want to know your personality types, you don't even have to bother taking the online test. Just ask her. She'll tell you what it is. She knows all of you well enough. She could tell you in a heartbeat what your personality type is with 100% accuracy, guaranteed. So think about this called the coin bag analogy. So every person goes into a conversation with a coin bag. Now, an introvert goes into the conversation with his bag full. Okay, the extrovert goes into the conversation with his bag empty. The introvert, as he goes into a conversation or into a group of people and he starts talking, he's giving out coins. Every person he talks to, he's giving out a coin, giving out a coin, giving out a coin. And by the time the evening's over, his bag's empty. He's given out all his coins. And the extroverts that he's been talking to, their bags are full. Because when an extrovert goes and he starts talking to other people, every conversation he has, he gets a coin. He gets a coin. He gets a coin. So the introvert leaves the party, he's broke. The extrovert leaves the party, he's wealthy. He's ready to go to another party because, well, I got all this money to blow. The introvert's like, I got to go home. I got to start saving money again. I'm broke. I can't even afford a cab. I'm going to have to walk. That's the difference between introverts and extroverts. Now, keep these things in mind when you're conversing with different people. And you want to be careful to not automatically assume that a person who doesn't talk a lot is either shy or unsocial. There's a difference between introversion and shyness and unsociability, right? Shyness is something, is a character flaw that needs to be broken, that needs to be worked on and needs to be fixed. But that's not introversion. Introversion is whether you gain or lose energy in a conversation, you know, that kind of thing. Shyness is you just don't like to talk to people and you're uncomfortable talking to people, and that needs to be fixed, right? That needs to be corrected in childhood, preferably, because that could definitely hinder you. Being an introvert isn't necessarily going to hinder you in life. You could be a successful salesman and be an introvert very easily. There's plenty of them. You could be a successful CEO and be an introvert, and there's lots of them. You can be extremely successful and be an introvert. If you're shy, you're going to have a very hard time in this world being successful. This kind of person, an introvert, he may just be introverted and prefers quality conversation in an intimate setting rather than socializing in groups. So, you know, you don't want to just want to assume the person is antisocial. But anyway, that's all I have to say. That was probably a really long sermon. But I didn't think I had enough to make it into two. Although if I would have realized how long last Sunday's would have gone, I would have cut that off and I'd have made this into three and it would have worked out fine. But hindsight's 20/20. So I thank you for your kind and patient attention this morning. I hope this was helpful. And I seriously recommend that you think about these things. Review it. Continue to review it. Practice it. And get better, become better conversationalist if you want to. I know that I do.